KALW.
Police departments are paramilitary organizations. Morale is directed from the top. Those are the people who determine the culture of a law enforcement agency.
Today, we learn about the new chief of the Oakland Police Department.
In order to make certain that his term is successful, he's really going to have to be a straight shooter and not play politics.
A conversation with criminal justice reporter Ali Winston. Then the transformation of libraries away from just books.
The mission related to knowledge and community is broader than books.
And how borrowing tools helps build community.
You can't afford to spend that $200 on a lawnmower that you might only use once a month.
Stay tuned. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Oakland Mayor Sheng Tao recently announced Floyd Mitchell as the new chief of the Oakland Police Department. Mitchell resigned from his former position as police chief in Lubbock, Texas, in 2023. To find out more about him and the challenges he's inheriting at OPD, KALW News editor Sunni Khalid spoke with Ali Winston, a criminal justice reporter and co-author of The Riders Come Out at Night, a book detailing the decades-old struggle to reform the Oakland Police Department.
Chief Mitchell is a Kansas City native. That's where he got his start in law enforcement. Kansas City, for those who don't know, is a large city in the Midwest, a little bit larger than Oakland. It has a significant public safety challenge. It's got a lot of gun violence and big center for narcotics trafficking, unfortunately, like Oakland. So he is used to working in high activity, kinetic departments. Lubbock also has a high rate of gun crime. It's the third most violent city in Texas, which, you know, is a state with very liberal gun laws. And he's not a stranger to the sort of city that Oakland is, which unfortunately has a decades-long problem with violent crime, and particularly gun crime and narcotics trafficking. But he's a little bit of an odd pick in the sense that, number one, he's from out of the Bay Area. There were candidates, in particular, Abdul Prigden, the San Leandro police chief, right to the south of Oakland, who were more known quantities, if you will. Linda Davis was a Cincinnati Police Department commander who was also on the final list, had experience in a department which has been under a federal reform decree, which Oakland has been since 2003 as a result of the Riders police abuse scandal in the early 2000s at the turn of the millennium. So she had experience both with violent crime reform program in a department that has gone through that process, and also with the sort of ceasefire program, that the carrot and stick targeted violence reduction program that Oakland has doubled back down on after, for some reason, downgrading it during Mayor Libby Schaaf's term. It was really the one violence reduction program that has worked in the 17 years I've covered Oakland. And it fell by the wayside even before the pandemic, and it's been re-upped. And Mr. Mitchell did commit to that program. All the candidates have basically said, this is how we're going to approach violent crime. But I've heard that Mr. Mitchell had some familiarity working with budget constraints in Lubbock, Texas, which is going to be a reality in Oakland. The city's tax revenues are at least $170 million below where they were projected to be at this year. So he's going to have to work within constraints. But that being said, he does come in with a fresh slate. He comes in with fresh eyes. And sometimes you need an outsider's perspective to see the problems and to kind of also break away from the very established and kind of ingrained office politics, palace politics, the intrigue that characterizes so many law enforcement agencies and their upper workings, in particular the Oakland Police Department. The immediate former police chief had a lot of run-ins in the past with both the old city administrator, Deborah Edgerly, the police union. He engaged in some, you know, internal knife fighting of his own. His wife, Deputy Chief Drennan Lindsay, is also a pretty powerful figure in the department. She had applied for the chief's job as well. She is facing serious discipline for her role in short-circuiting the internal affairs investigation into Detective Fong Tran's basically bribing a witness for homicide convictions back in the previous decade. There are four other police commanders who are also facing discipline over this matter. And the new police chief, Chief Mitchell, is now walking into that. That's basically the sort of stuff that's greeting him.
What do you see Chief Mitchell's problems being as far as dealing with morale?
Morale is what you make of it, right? The department's been under the consent decree for 21 years. The consent decree itself is old enough to drink, drive, and vote. The officers who are coming in to OPD were possibly in elementary school when this thing happened. They may not have even been born when the actual scandal, the Ryder scandal, took place in 2000. So this to them is ancient history. That being said, the department has completely revamped its training over the course of the previous two decades. And, you know, I've sat in on some academy classes. I've heard the lectures that they're given about the police department's compliance with the consent decree. And I think that there's the broader narrative the police union feeds and always is fed about, we're not supported, citizens don't stand up for things, you know, we're being defunded, which is not true. The budget line shows the police department has not been defunded at any point recently. They've just gained money. They consume about 40% of the city's budget. But there is a contentious relationship between Oakland and its police force. That's a function of history. That's a function of the way the department went about its work during the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. One could say all the way back to the 19th century. It's a public service job. It's also very well remunerated. Officers earn well over $100,000 a year starting, plus health benefits and pension. And what's significant about Oakland is the academy actually does produce quite a few officers who then lateral out to other departments. The other departments do kind of pick off OPD's academy graduates because they know they're well-trained, they know how to deal with stressful situations, and they can earn more money elsewhere. So morale has never not been an issue as long as I've reported on law enforcement. It's always, oh, we're not respected, this, that. And realistically, you know, police departments are paramilitary organizations. Morale is directed from the top. It goes downwards, right? And your supervisors, your commanders, your captains, your lieutenants, in particular, your sergeants, and your field training officers, those are the people who determine the culture of a law enforcement agency. That is really where the mission of public safety is accomplished or is not accomplished or is undermined. And when sergeants and field training officers and captains really hold their officers to account on their basic duties and upholding the letter of the law for everybody and handling their job in a professional manner, that's when the results really shine out.
That was Ali Winston, criminal justice reporter who's reported extensively on the OPD. He's co-author of the book, The Riders Come Out at Night. And you can find a longer version of their conversation at klw.org/crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This Saturday is National Library Day. And before we celebrate these public institutions, let's find out what exactly defines a library. In the days of the Library of Alexandria in Egypt, libraries stored ancient knowledge and words were kept on pages of papyrus. Books were a library's primary product until the past few decades. Today, you can also use your library card to check out video games and to stream videos. Some cities even lend out construction equipment, have seed exchanges, and host yoga classes. Reporter Holly J. McDee tells us this story about what it means to be a library in the 21st century and where the books fit in.
Libraries are usually quiet, but Berkeley Library Board of Trustees meetings can get pretty darn loud.
If this is where the library's going, I'm desperate. They now bore me and terrify me.
That's from a meeting held after the Berkeley Public Library director decided to remove thousands of books from the shelves. In the library world, that's actually called bookweeding. Books that hadn't been checked out for 3 years were removed. And that did not sit well with some Berkeley residents.
We deserve better than that. Berkeley does, our kids do, the country does.
Since then, the Berkeley Library director resigned, a new director was appointed, and bookweeding was put on pause. But this flare-up raised the question for Berkeley Library that many others have had to wrestle with. What is the purpose of a library? Well, at least in the beginning, it was, quote,
having nothing in view but the good of mankind,
That's the Redwood Library's guiding principle. It's said to be the first lending library in America, officially opened in 1750. And maintaining the good of mankind to this library meant lots of books. They stocked books on beekeeping, lantern building, and cider making. And for over a century, a library was defined by books, as helpfully demonstrated by Cookie Monster.
Me want a book about Little Red Riding Hood.
All right.
And one box of cookies, please.
Maybe you don't understand. You see, this is a library.
Yeah?
Yes, we have books here. Only books.
But that's not the case today at the San Francisco Public Library. In 2014, only 10% of the library's budget went to books. Like in Berkeley, some library goers are mad about the way this library treats books.
There's a symbolism to where the books are located, as far as I'm concerned, and that is they are pushed to the very periphery of the building.
Peter Warfield started a group called the Library Users Association in protest in the 90s after thousands of library books were tossed when the new main branch of the San Francisco Public Library was built. He tries to show me an article about that in an old New Yorker, but we can't find it. Many of the bound periodicals were moved to make room for a new literacy and learning center, much to Warfield's dismay. He doesn't appreciate the other things the library offers, like a social worker to help the many homeless visitors, or job services.
For people to get a job, why don't they provide telephones? Why don't they provide a haberdashery where people could get a suit and a tie and a white shirt, and a nice pair of shoes? There's a lot that could be done, but it's not the mission of the library.
Peter Warfield believes the library's mission should be to provide reading material, period, end of story. Teen librarian Mary Obler sees it differently.
What we're doing here at The Mix is really just a first step of a whole evolution of how libraries are growing.
The Mix is the library's teen center, located on the second floor of the public library's main branch. It opened last summer. That's from the audio production studio inside The Mix. At The Mix, teens can make music, learn to code, and even make things with a 3D printer. Obler tells me that lots of teens who come here don't like reading, and that's not so bad.
All of the things that we provide through our programming, be it video production or music making or poetry or 2D animation or 3D printing, is all engaging kids on different levels of literacies.
She says the Teen Center is attracting people who would never otherwise set foot in a library at all, like teenager Lauren Ng.
What kind of books do you like to read?
I don't like reading books.
But she does like The Mix. Lots of teens do, not just for the music labs or 3D printers, but as a place to just hang out, which is exactly what Obler and the library want.
What we are hoping to do is to create a space where you can, of course, continue to do that, but also where you can maybe learn collaboratively and be exposed to different ways of thinking. I feel like, yeah, this is kind of a big trend and evolution of the way libraries are going.
Well, actually, libraries have been collaborative spaces for a long time, like the Mechanics Institute Library and Chess Room in downtown San Francisco.
It was founded when the gold rush was coming to an end and people were trying to reimagine, you know, how they create a sense of community and how they rebuild a society that was really suffering.
That's Ralph Lewin, the executive director for the Mechanics Institute, one of the oldest libraries on the West Coast. He explains that in those days, a mechanic could be anyone who made something. Poets, for instance, could be mechanics. The Mechanics Institute was formed as a place where people could exchange ideas, collaborate, and learn mechanical arts.
So I think what we're seeing is, at least for the Mechanics Institute, we've seen a return to those original values and mission.
It's still a collaborative space, but with a different audience. Tech workers and book lovers mingle over tables, and different San Francisco literary organizations rent rooms from the Institute.
There's value in books, but the mission related to knowledge and community is broader than books. thinking about how we can best be places where people come together and learn and access information and knowledge. That's broader than books.
So, what is a library? Opinions differ greatly. Some people think libraries should be the bookkeepers. For others, they're a space to be loud and play with 3D printers. Some just want a space to meet and collaborate with other people. What's clear is that libraries, whether focused on books or not, continue to be important spaces for people who want to learn.
There's always going to be a role for libraries as long as they continue to serve that hunger.
Hungry for books, or?
Me want book about cookies.
Fine, that we have, a book about cookies. Good.
And a glass of milk, please.
Anything's possible in the library. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Holly reported that story in 2016.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. So Cookie Monster may be hungry for books, but what if he needed to borrow a Hobart dough mixer? Well, some libraries have an appliance section. Buying tools can be expensive, and figuring out where to store them can be a hassle. That's where the Richmond Tool Library comes in. Reporter Andrew St. Singh takes us along to take a look.
Hello.
Hello.
On Wednesday afternoons, Micah Brumfield is on duty at the library, but he's not running out books.
You here to check out that lawnmower right there?
Yes.
And you know,
this is the Richmond Tool Library, where residents of the city can rent everything from a lawnmower to a table saw totally free of charge.
Your space is pretty small, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to get you the cordless
one. This is the patch of grass in the backyard. Perfect.
Micah says borrowing from the tool library is a convenient alternative for people who don't have the space or budget to invest in a personal tool collection.
I think it really encourages people to know that they have a place that they can go to. They don't have to pay for it, which is a huge barrier in a community like Richmond, where everything is incredibly expensive. You can't afford to spend that $200 on a lawnmower that you might only use once a month.
Richmond residents can use the tools they check out for a whole week before they have to bring their rentals back.
Hey!
Hey, how's it going?
I didn't even know you had anything.
You want me to put it back there?
Yes.
Okay.
It was just a ladder, right?
Yep, just a ladder.
This is more than just a public tool shed, though. It's a place to swap ideas, and even materials. When the guy who rented the chainsaw comes in to return it, Micah asks,
did you get any pretty good-sized logs?
Oh, man, you know, that's the thing. I still got to chop them.
Micah's really into woodworking, and lately he's been trying to make wooden coasters.
I didn't forget you. I
appreciate it.
Yeah. I didn't forget you. I just said
hopefully,
I hadn't had time to cut
maybe
it.
Maybe I'll make you a couple of coasters.
Because I still got more.
When they can, the Richmond Tool Library patrons really do try to help each other.
It's quite a lovely kind of a community meeting place.
This is Lindy Dugan, a retired physician. She told me about the time she rented the electric sawzall to prune a branch off her lemon tree. She got to talking with the woman who checked it out before her.
She wanted to know what I was doing, and she said, well, boy, that's kind of tricky for your first time. Why don't I come over and give you a hand?
But that sense of community and support hasn't made Lindy more reliant on others. It's actually empowered her.
I really feel it's giving me health and helping me keep mentally alive and learning and adapting.
When I met Lindy, she was picking up a power washer for her latest project. Back at her home in Atchison Village, she's prepping the shed in her backyard so she can paint it. As she screws her garden hose into the power washer, she tells me she didn't even know this step was necessary at first.
I did it once.
She got a sander from the tool library and took off the old paint.
Then she put on a coat of primer.
And my self-taught skills, I didn't see anything about power washing.
But it was obvious she had missed something. The primer wouldn't adhere. She had to re-sand the shed, and today she turns on the spigot to pressure wash the debris away.
The important thing is to just remember that you're learning, and it's all a journey, and each time it'll get maybe, hopefully, a little better.
She cuts the power washer on and lets it rip. Lindy's having a blast, exploring what's available at the tool library.
Looks pretty clean, doesn't it?
Stories like these are exactly what Guadalupe Morales, a city employee who manages the tool library, wants to hear.
I think we want to encourage people to like try new things and like explore that creativity, whatever, you know, it is, if it's tools or if it's like fixing your backyard, it's doing DIY home projects. We just want people to do more of that.
And it's all free.
It's accessible for everyone. You know, there's no limit to like if whatever your income level is, whatever, you know, your background is.
Guadalupe grew up in the Richmond San Pablo area, but she started her adult life in Richmond as an AmeriCorps volunteer, promoting group cleanups to help people beautify their communities.
And with cleanups, we needed tools.
They heard about this Parks Department employee informally lending out shovels and rakes to Richmond residents who were interested in small street cleanups. That's when Guadalupe and her colleagues got the idea to start a tool library. It took some time.
Months and months of planning and talking a lot with Berkeley and Oakland.
See, Berkeley's had a tool library since 1979, and Oakland's had one since 2000. So their librarians had plenty of advice on how to get started. After all that planning and a successful crowdfunding campaign, the Richmond Tool Library opened its doors in June 2016. And it's been a hit.
So it's been good, and I think a lot of it has been people's, or the community's demand for tools.
It became so popular with Richmond residents that the city took note. The city council approved a budget for the library, and Guadalupe, who got a job with the city after her AmeriCorps term ended, has worked to keep it growing.
People have asked about automotive tool lending, bike repair tool lending.
And expanded hours and locations for the library.
It sounds like maybe the next phase would be to have maybe more like satellite branches.
In fact, her colleagues have just launched a new service to bring tools to people in farther away neighborhoods.
Andy, you're good?
Yeah, okay.
On the first Saturday of February, a team of Richmond City employees drive a trailer filled with power tools, hand tools, and a bike repair kit to a church parking lot off of Fred Jackson Way in North Richmond.
Are you here for the North Richmond Mobile Tool Library?
Yes, I am!
Yay!
This is your all first Saturday.
Yes, yeah. You'll be our very first client member.
The new mobile tool library will be here to serve the residents of North Richmond every first and third Saturday of the month. It can bring tools to people who might otherwise not be able to access them at the main library. On this first day, most people who stop by are curious but a little hesitant. Like Brother Rod Parker, the deacon for the church.
I'm a one-way. I'm all thumbs.
You're all thumbs?
I'm all thumbs, bro.
He says he's not very handy, so he doesn't see himself doing much carpentry or plumbing.
You know, so as far as fixing things, the only thing I would use if you had it in there would be a lawnmower.
They have those.
No, you don't.
It's not there right now, but we do have one. You can rent it.
Now, okay, what's the details about the renting?
The North Richmond Mobile Tool Library is new, but if the stationary library is any indication, it could become more than just a place to rent tools. It could become a real community hub. In Richmond, I'm Andrew Saintsing for Cross Currents.
Andrew reported that story last year as a fellow in our Audio Academy, our 9-month professional audio journalism training program. And applications are open for this fall. We're looking for creative thinkers who aspire to make audio stories. So if that sounds like you, go to klw.org/audioacademy. And the deadline to apply is April 21st. Before we leave you, here's a preview of our new series that'll follow the Oakland A's last season in the Bay Area.
spring has arrived, and once more, a nation observes its ancient rites, including the start of the regular season for Major League Baseball. For more than 150 springs, the national pastime has been one of those rites, as exalted cathedrals across the nation opened their doors to generations of fans paying homage, once more, to a child's game played on a baseball diamond. And so it was last week that the beloved A's began their 56th season at the Coliseum, the site of 4 World Series championships, 6 American League pennants, 17 West Divisional crowns, and 4 wild card berths. But the glory days of Charlie Finley's swingin' A's of the 1970s, the flash of native son Ricky Henderson, and the thunder of the Bash brothers, Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco, are long gone, and so is hope. Last year, the owners of the A's announced the team would be relocating to Las Vegas. The A's lease expires after this season, but a shovel hasn't been turned on the Las Vegas Strip for the new ballpark. There are reports that the team, a vagabond franchise that has wandered from Philadelphia to Kansas City to Oakland, will play next year in Sacramento, Fresno, or even Salt Lake City. I'm Suni Khalid, KALW's news editor, and welcome to Foul Ball, a season-long series looking at what could be the A's final season in Oakland, which would also mark the end of major league team sports in a city that boasted all 4 a half century ago.
Thanks, Suni. We'll be dropping the first episode this Thursday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.